You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, good morning. My name is Hallie Clark, and I work as a school counselor at Harambe and Calumet Christian Schools. And this morning, we are going to be talking about raising kids in the age of technology. Because this really is the era in which we live, right? I've got a graph up here from a global data report on internet usage throughout the world, and it's astounding. Probably can't see those numbers very well, but 47 countries have over 80% connection to the internet, both rurally and urban areas. 33 countries have over 90% connection. And there are 9 countries with over 98% connection to the internet, which is just wild to me that that's even possible. And let's see, this is where we stand in the United States. We're at like 93.1% connection to the internet. So that's, yeah, that's pretty amazing. And real quick, I want to just show you some stats about what this global internet usage looks like. So there are 5.64 billion individuals using the internet in the world. And the average weekly amount of time spent per individual is 33 hours and 23 minutes. So we are using a lot of internet in this digital age of technology. 95.9% of users are accessing the internet via smartphones or mobile phones. And again, I mean, this is across different types of populations. We've got urban areas that have 83.6% connection throughout the entire world, all parts of the world. And in the rural areas of the world, there's still 47.9% connection. So, yes, there has been an amazing advancement in technology in recent years, right? Like, I mean, that's incredible that those numbers are even possible right now. And the internet really has connected the world in ways that we could not have imagined, even just 50 years ago. This would have been unimaginable. And it's actually only been 42 years since the birth of the internet. The internet was born in 1983, if you were wondering. So this is pretty new to us. This happened within the last like generation or two, or I don't know how you, depends on how you divide out generations, but yeah, within the last 42 years. And it is safe to say that we live in a very different world than our parents and our grandparents grew up in. And so as they were parenting, there were parts of technology that they were trying to figure out and think about, and we've got our own set today. You know, with the exponential growth in digital technology since the genesis of the internet, there has just only been, you know, more incredible growth within the last, like, even 5 years is pretty different. So, the digital space that your 5 and 15-year-olds are growing up in today is just worlds of difference between what our 5 and 15-year-old selves were experiencing. So we're learning along with them, really. That's kind of what it comes down to, is this is new. It makes sense that it can feel overwhelming at times to figure it out, keeping up with the advances in technology, trying to think about wisdom pieces for how to navigate this new access and functionality well. It is a challenge. It makes a lot of sense that this is something that's important to parents and educators. So... Yeah, and it has been a growing concern for both parents and educators as we're realizing the effects that this increase in digital access, what it has to the developing minds of children and teens. So that's why we're talking about this today. One of the things that has sparked some concern is that the Surgeon General has warned that we need to take this seriously. They released a 19-page advisory in 2023 about the risks of social media to young people, and he's really urging for there to be more research in this area because the amount of information that's out there, it's not really, like, we need to see more, like, stats. Like, what is the actual impact that we're seeing? And they put together this 19-page advisory, and they were able to outline some possible impacts that are suggested, as well as, okay, based on these issues of concern, what are some things that parents can do? What are things that we can equip children and adolescents to be able to do to take care of these possible risks well? And so we're going to look into some of that this morning to see what their recommendations are. And I'll provide some other recommendations as well. But before we get too far into this conversation, because it could be easy to just go right into it, I do want to pause and think about what is the perspective that we want to take, that we want to adopt as we're wading into these concerns. And so we're in a unique place as Christians who have a biblical worldview to consider some of the wisdom principles that that God offers to us to be able to apply to this area of digital technology and how to navigate it with children. So like I said before, I've talked with a lot of parents who feel overwhelmed by this topic because it just feels so big. It's so ingrained in our daily life now. It's hard to imagine life not having these things. So I guess another aspect of it is it's advancing so quickly that it's kind of hard to keep up with what's even going on out there. Like, how do we stay informed? How do we know what precautions we need to take? And like I said, we're in a unique spot as Christians because we know that there is a good God who knows humanity. He knows what we're capable of. It's not surprising to him that we've come up with these amazing advancements in technology. And he knows the desires of our hearts. God gave us good desires. And as we're trying to wade through, you know, what draws us to technology, what draws children to technology, and the way that's being used in different areas, we can look at the positive benefits and we can appreciate those while also recognizing the misuse or the overuse of these things is going to be what actually starts to cause some of these risks and concerns that we see. And so looking at it from this lens, we can gain wisdom for how do we navigate it, how do we equip students and children to use the wisdom that God offers to us. Yes, no matter what humanity comes up with, and I mean, who knows what the advancement in technology is going to be in the next 10 years or so, right? Like, we can't imagine it. You know, we couldn't have imagined it 10 years ago. It's hard to know from here on out. But I guess what I really want to offer to us today as we're talking about this together is that from a Christian perspective, we should never feel hopeless about any cultural trend or data points or challenges they pose because we have a good God who is willing to walk through it with us, who knows us deeply, who knows the desires of our hearts and what we need, and he has good wisdom and insight for us. So now we can jump into it more. Except we should probably read this. I guess Isaiah 46:10 came to mind when I was thinking about, you know, maybe God's perspective on all these things is that we know that God lives outside of time and he knows the full timeline of human history. So again, like I said, the reason we can have confidence knowing that God has good wisdom for us is he was expecting the things that we were going to create and come up with. And so because he knows from beginning to end what humanity will end up doing, he has this to say. He says that he is a God who he declares the end from the beginning and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will accomplish all my purposes. That God says, you know, I know what's going on. I know what's happened in the past. I know it will happen in the future. And my good purposes can't be thwarted. So that should give us a lot of confidence. I also like Philippians 4, 6 through 7. There are real things that cause concern for us in our lives, including what do we do about all the advances in technology and how to navigate that with our kids. And God asks us to share our worries with him and to trust him to give us what we need. And that really is the amazing thing about prayer, that he invites us into this conversation with him and so we can gain wisdom. Philippians 4:6-7 says, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So with that, I guess I just want to share too that the focus of this conversation today is not meant to work us up into anxiety or a doom and gloom perspective on technology. Our purpose today is to cultivate wisdom about how to navigate this new frontier well, with the children in our lives. Then we can be free to enjoy the best parts of digital technology and media and use them to bring about good, because God loves to see our creativity, our ingenuity, our expression, our connection with others, things that digital technology can be used for and is widely used. And we have the opportunity to use these tools to enhance things that are good and pleasing and excellent. So, yeah, I guess what we're going to be looking at this morning is ways that we can safeguard ourselves and our children with wisdom so that we don't become used by the tools that we have in our possession for our use. All right, let's press on to this topic. So I mentioned the Surgeon General report that came out in 2023, and I think one of my handouts is a summary of the Surgeon General report, so you can look at it yourself. And this is the executive summary, so it's like taking that 19-page report, putting it into two pages. And there's three key takeaways that they summarized with that content. The first thing that they can say confidently is that social media is used by young people nearly universally, that up to 90% of young people aged 13 to 17 report using social media platforms, and nearly two-thirds of teenagers report using social media every day, and one-third report using social media almost constantly, was how they described it for themselves. Another key takeaway is that social media presents a meaningful risk of harm to youths while also providing some benefits. So the Surgeon General, as they're kind of evaluating the data that they collected, as they were considering this topic, they acknowledge both the benefits and the risks of technology. And the report's guidance really is about, okay, we can recognize there are some benefits, so we don't want to pretend there are no benefits, but there are also risks that we need to understand. And the guidance that they offer from that kind of takes these things into consideration. So as far as the meaningful risks of harm to youth is that there are types of use and content that children and adolescents are exposed to that pose mental health concerns. Children and adolescents who spend more than 3 hours a day on social media face double the risk of mental health problems, including experiencing symptoms of depression and anxiety. This is concerning, as a recent survey showed that teenagers, on average, spend 3.5 hours a day on social media. So the average teenager is in that range of usage that is has been shown to create symptoms of depression and anxiety. And when asked about the impact of social media on their body image, 46% of adolescents aged 13 to 17 said that social media makes them feel worse. So children and adolescents are recognizing some of the effects, and they're using it very widely. So guidance, wisdom is definitely needed in this area to help them walk through it well. The final takeaway is that this is their statement, that we cannot conclude that social media is sufficiently safe for children and adolescents. They can't say much more than that in particular, and there are some articles out there that talk about why it's hard to have the data show like a direct correlation between these things, but the suggestion is there that there is significant risk of harm to children and adolescents by using social media anxiety, or social media. And so what the advisory offered is that we need more information. And so this was kind of an initial report to kind of prompt additional research in this area to answer key questions about what kind of content, what kind of usage is more harmful, what can protect young people from the negative effects of social media. So we're diving into that today a little bit more as well. I mentioned that in the handouts, there's the advisory executive summary from that report. There's also a list of what parents and caregivers can do, as well as what children and adolescents can do, is one of the handouts. It's copied front to back. And so those are the specific suggestions that the Surgeon General offered after publishing this report. So we'll look at some of those pieces. Based on this information, what parents and caregivers can do that they are suggesting is to create a family media plan. So to have it defined is going to be helpful for kind of taking control of this, this train that could just go off on its own at whatever rate, is desired by the children in the family. But having a plan will help to define it a little bit more, the usage. Another suggestion is to create tech-free zones and to encourage children to foster in-person relationships. They also suggest modeling responsible social media behavior, that parents can do a lot just by modeling their own usage and conversations about their own experience with social media. Parents can teach kids about technology and empower them to be responsible online participants at an appropriate age, which they don't define what the appropriate age is, but as you kind of know your own child and when that conversation will be useful, having those conversations is really valuable. And another thing that parents and caregivers can do is report cyberbullying and online abuse and exploitation. So as things come up, that reporting is really important to get harmful content taken down. Oh, and a final suggestion, which the Surgeon General himself has done in his own community, as he has children of his own. And one thing that we can do is work with other parents to establish norms and practices. So what this looks like is, you know, if your children are connected with other children in your community, whether at church or at school, and to be able to kind of start this conversation with other parents, like, you know what really makes some of managing social media, digital technology difficult is just the different expectations between families, different types of usage. If we were to work together more to be like, you know, part of, I guess, one thing that keeps a lot of families feeling stuck is like, okay, if I keep my student from using certain technologies, they're going to be the weird kid that isn't connected, you know? And so it's like, well, I don't want my kid to be like that. And so what some communities are doing is like, hey, what if we just all get on the same page and decide when do we want to start, you know, letting them use some of these technologies and just make sure that kids are staying connected, maybe delaying purchasing certain devices or letting them use certain social media until a little bit of an older age. There's a campaign called Wait Till Eighth is an example of one way of thinking, like, don't get your child a cell phone until they're in eighth grade. So some communities are trying that as a way of, you know, across the board, it doesn't feel like so much of a norm that keeps kids out if they don't have connection to that. So that's interesting to consider. The practicalities of that might look different from family to family and community to community, but that's an interesting idea for helping to think creatively about how to help with some of the issues that come up with limiting certain technologies. Okay. They also have some suggestions for what children and adolescents can do. So this is something that we can empower kids with, whether at home or in the way we talk about technology at school. We should equip kids to know how to reach out for help. If they do come across something that causes them concern, if they're experiencing some of these symptoms of anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, how to notice that in themselves and how to know who to reach out to get help for that. We can also, kids can also create their own boundaries to help balance their online and offline activities. Especially, as students are getting older, being able to invite them into that conversation about, like, let's think about what's reasonable here. Like, how do you know how much TV is too much TV? Or how much scrolling is too much scrolling? And help them kind of define that and get used to sort of learning how to set their own boundaries also and maybe make commitments about how much they want to allow themselves. Another thing that children and adolescents can do is develop positive strategies and healthy practices. So some of that can be like, healthy practices could be like, you know, I am having trouble sleeping at night. Like, I can't fall asleep very easily. It might be connected to my tech use. A helpful strategy would be to not use, you know, my phone an hour or two before bed or something like that. We can also teach children and adolescents to be cautious about what you share online and ways to protect yourselves and others online. So a big part of this is not keeping harassment or abuse a secret when it happens online, when they see it, and also to not take part in that kind of behavior online. You know, it's so easy to be negative using digital platforms because you're not interacting with a person face-to-face. People will say things that they wouldn't say to a person if they were right in front of them, but they are, you know, they could be more prone to doing that when there's not a face, a real person they're interacting with. So teaching them to recognize that in themselves and to be a good digital citizen is very important as well. All right, so like I said, part of this conversation is recognizing both the benefits and the, you know, risks of digital media and technology. So I want to acknowledge a lot of the benefits that we all are enjoying with our social media and digital technology. So we can think of this in several areas, in areas of connection, learning, creativity, productivity, and getting information and news. There are great benefits in each of these areas that I wouldn't want to go back to not having this kind of access and usage to be able to use these things. And so let's see, yeah, what is being offered to us that is valuable? And then we'll look at some of the flip side of these things. There's actually a pretty close correlation between the benefits that we enjoy and then when it goes bad. So if we can see that, we'll be able to gain wisdom in thinking about using these technologies. So let's think about some positive impacts that social media and digital technology has created for connection. Well, a big one, and actually when we look at the survey data for what most people are using digital technology and media for, is for keeping in touch with family and friends. It's actually the number one thing in almost every age group category. And if it's not the first thing, it's like the second thing. And so this is great, right? If you've got family out of town, to be able to FaceTime them, to be able to share photos, there are just so many great ways of connecting that wasn't possible before. You know, like back in the day when there were, you know, horse-drawn carriages, if someone wasn't around and you couldn't call them, you're like, well, guess they're not in my life anymore, so I don't know them. So thank goodness that we're not stuck. I think about that a lot, actually. Like, boy, a lot of these problems would have been fixed if they just had a cell phone, but they didn't have the technology, and we do now. All right, let's think about the area of learning. So we have a lot of great advancements that have allowed us to learn online as well. If you've ever used, you know, Khan Academy, or just going on YouTube and finding out, like, literally anything that you want to be able to do, like some home improvement project, you can learn online, which is, like, so awesome. People are learning skills that they probably wouldn't have been able to learn before because it's at the tip of their fingers. So technology really can enhance our love of learning. We're able to explore our interests, we can solve problems, we've got an expanded knowledge base to reach into. That's been a huge blessing for a lot of people. How about the area of creativity? That we can use these technologies to enhance our creativity by, you know, using these tools to bring ideas to fruition. Some of my favorite digital technology tools are Canva. Like, oh my goodness, what an awesome blessing it has been to have, like, a great tool for, you know, creating flyers, posters, like having just a huge resource of images and tools you can use to create awesome things for work, for events that, you know, your family or Bible study is doing. That's a great tool. I have been very interested in generative AI when it comes to being able to create, like, digital art, and even the idea of, like, but, like, processes that would be, feels overwhelming to do on your own, to have a digital assistant to help you think through the process of, like, I want to write a book. What are some ideas for, like, how do I get started? And it can give you some great ideas, and you can kind of follow some of those steps. You add your own ideas, it'll kind of give you feedback. Like, that's actually pretty cool for creativity and kind of, like, having something to interact with that's so so interactive. All right, let's think, too, about productivity. So because we have all these different digital technologies and tools, we're able to spend less time on menial tasks that just, you know, we could spend a really long time creating certain things, or we could use these tools to get those things done more quickly, and then theoretically that should give us more time for connecting with other people, for serving, that sort of stuff. And that's been true of technological advances, like, since the beginning. That's actually kind of why humans create new technologies and tools, is to come up with more efficient ways to do things, and that has created a lot more opportunity for things like recreation and connecting instead of, you know, working 14 hours a day or something. All right, and the last area I want to think about is news and information. Because we have news sources that we can access at the tip of our fingers from all around the world, we do know a lot more about what's going on in the world. And from a Christian perspective, one benefit of that is that we have a greater opportunity to pray for the needs around the world. For some of us who are connected to people who are serving in different areas of the world and needs pop up, we can in real time pray for what's going on and know that we're actually having an impact in those difficult circumstances that need support. So that's an exciting application of this technology also. All right, so like I said, awesome benefits to technology. A lot of the risks or the negative impacts of technology are like these good things, just like skewed, overused, misused, or the way that we're thinking and using it, yeah, can just take our minds in a really unhelpful direction. For example, for this connection piece, you know, the positive impact is that it allows us to keep in touch with family and friends. On the flip side, you know, it has created more opportunity for comparing our real self to the best images that are curated by our friends and family, right? So it's not that Facebook is bad and evil in itself, but it can lead to, as I'm spending a lot of time scrolling, if you guys know what doom scrolling is, that's where you get into that cycle of just continually moving through this never-ending flow of information that's being put out there by our friends and family and videos and everything. And it can put our mind in a really depressed state. And when we're looking at all the best parts of people's lives and thinking about our own, which we know all the aspects of, not just the stuff that we're putting out there for people to see, and it can create a sense of not measuring up. All right, how about with learning? So on one hand, you know, we've got that we can enhance our love of learning using digital technologies. On the other hand, it can also lead to lazy learning, right? If I know that the information is out there, I don't retain anything for myself, and we might cut corners. This happens in academia a good amount. And we'll talk about that too under creativity and fair use kind of considerations and plagiarism. But sometimes when we're over-relying on technology in the learning area, maybe we're not learning for ourselves, we're missing out on deeper learning. All right, and the creativity part, on one hand, we can enhance our own creativity by using these tools. On the other hand, we can steal or claim other people's work, infringing on, you know, there's a lot of concerns, especially with generative AI, fair use. Like what is fair use of these different, data points that it's drawing from. So ethically, that's something to consider. There are copyright, you know, concerns when everybody's, you know, life's work is put out there on the web, when people kind of steal from it, that can be a concern for plagiarism, for misrepresenting our work. So we've got to take that into consideration. When it comes to productivity, it's great that we can be more efficient with things. And it's like, okay, with that extra time that we are getting, what are we using that extra time for? Is it more work? Because that would be kind of an overuse of this benefit to technology where, you know, we start to find that we have an inability to rest. Like, I feel like I always have to be doing something because I could do this other thing because I can automate certain things and I can just keep rolling with things. And it can create kind of this value in us where we value achieving over anything else, that achievement is of utmost importance, and so we can miss out on important things like connecting with other people. All right, and finally, with news and information, right? On one hand, it's great to know what's going on in the world so that we can support, like through prayer, and to be able to impact in other ways that we now have access to, like even sending money and that kind of stuff. On the other hand, they're finding that one of the reasons why this generation is so anxious is because we're so connected to everything going on in the world, all the bad news that's out there. It's a lot for like one human brain to take in. We're finding that, you know, in the past people didn't know about all the things going on. We only worried about, you know, what we had direct kind of contact with. And now to be inundated with all this information, it takes a toll on the human mind and soul. We weren't meant to be omniscient. God is omniscient. Humans are limited. And so I think we kind of feel ourselves being stretched to the limit in this area. So wisdom means recognizing healthy usage versus misuse and overuse. That's one way we can think about this. So if we're running into a concern with technology, one way we can think about it is like, is this a misuse or overuse situation with this, you know, technology? And we can try to realign that with like, what would it look like for me to engage with this in a healthy way. Okay, so another thing that I want to offer us this morning is, as we're thinking about, you know, we're taking in all this information, we know that there are all these different risks to mental health and well-being when it comes to digital technology usage. I would like to offer that there are six elements that we can bolster in any family to foster digitally healthy families. And so those six elements are awareness, boundaries and safeguards, modeling, teaching wisdom principles and skills, keeping an open dialogue, and prayer. So we can kind of assess these for ourselves in each of our families and think about which of these things am I already doing? What are we already strong in? What are some ways that we can improve in each of these areas to kind of create a well-rounded support for the family to navigate digital technology and social media well? Okay, so the first thing I offered was awareness. And I guess I say awareness and for a lot of reasons. One is that awareness is the first level of any kind of self-defense. And so, you know, that piece is that you can't defend against something that you don't know about, right? So if we are expanding our understanding of what's out there, you know, this is both on the parent side, parental awareness of like what apps and media are out there, what's accessible that students can download. And do you know what apps and media your child consumes? Because depending on your, I guess, like, parental controls on devices, if they're able to just download anything, they could have access to a lot of things, and do we know it's actually on there? So that's important. It also involves bolstering the child's awareness. And so this is an age-appropriate consideration. They don't need to know everything, right? But is your child aware that some apps and media can be harmful to their minds? Like, if they are older, older like adolescents, are they aware of the concern there so that they can also be monitoring this for themselves? And is your child aware of things they should do if they run into inappropriate content? Or if they notice some of the symptoms of the risks of technology, like not sleeping well, feeling more anxious, depressed, lonely, these kind of things, are they aware? Can they recognize those things in themselves so that they can get support? When it comes to awareness, like I said, it is overwhelming to keep up with all the new developments in technology. And so this just in, I've got a parent alert for you about something that I learned about actually just last week. A friend sent me an article that describes some concerns that we should be aware of about generative AI models that are out there. Generative AI is new in 2025. We're just a whole new frontier. And when I say generative AI, that's like those chat boxes or blurbs where you can kind of interact with it like it's a robot being kind of thing. So you can, like, you know, you can ask it questions. It has more of a personality behind it when it answers your questions. I guess before it wasn't so much of a personality. It was more like, you know, glorified search engine plus some kind of creative thinking in there. But basically what's happening now is that a lot of these generative AI models also have, like, they're developing personalities for them. Like, basically, this idea of companionship models are where the AI, you can kind of tell them what type of person you want to interact with. And some of them even have, like, celebrity personalities uploaded to the tool itself. And so it can sound like you're talking to John Cena or Kristen Bell or some of the ones that I remember. Anyways, something that's concerning, my friend sent me this article from the Wall Street Journal. It was describing how these AI models are built into many of the generative AI programs that are within, like, mainstream apps like Facebook, Instagram, ChatGPT. You know, those are apps that we're kind of used to at this point that adolescents are using and children even. And the concern is that these models are built in with this companionship kind of like feature in there. And so anyone at this point can access, like, oh, hey, there's a little, you know, Meta AI in the corner. I can interact with it. I can ask it questions. It can talk to me. And it does have a very personal feel to it. And what's concerning about some of the content of these companionship personas is that many of them will engage in explicit conversation and scenarios without regard to the user's age. It's concerning that it's there to begin with, but then for it to also have, like, kind of no regard is super concerning that the Wall Street Journal was investigating and pointing out. And it looks like app developers seem hesitant to create boundaries and restrictions to their AI programs, even for minors. The article that I have linked here was from, like, last week. I think it was April 28th is when that article came out. And at the point of publication, they said Meta still did not seem to be putting up the safeguards that they were calling for. And so That's a concern. It does seem like, I mean, there's, I guess I did a little bit of exploring to see like what exactly, what is Meta AI? Because I haven't seen it. I don't know if you guys have seen it in your, you know, Facebook apps, but there is a difference between your Meta AI that is on a desktop computer, or I guess that you're accessing via web browser versus on your mobile app. And there's a lot more functionality to the mobile app Meta AIs, and that's the one that has the, like, you know, the John Cena and Kristen Bell, and it's actually voice AI also, so you can have like a conversation with an actual voice. And what this article is saying is that, yeah, some of the conversations, it's not restricted to kind of like PG concepts for children and adolescents even. So, and it's not something you can turn off, so that's concerning also. Hopefully we're gonna see, because there's kind of this whistleblower article that just came out, that they're gonna be really pressured to put in those safeguards. But until then, and because we don't know, this is something to be aware of. And I guess that's gonna be really helpful too as we're thinking about our next point. Oh, I'll come back to this in a second. Next point about boundaries and safeguards. I think we need to really take the boundaries and safeguards more seriously when some of this technology is so new that we don't know yet what our kids can access, because we just haven't run into it yet. I did want to mention also, I recently found this infographic that looked at what like people are using generative AI for between 2024 and 2025. And the top five, within the top five usage for generative AI, used to be for generating ideas. I guess people were doing some therapy and companionship connection with the AI last year. But this year it seems like therapy and companionship, organizing life, finding purpose are like the top three usages for generative AI today. So the word companionship means something different to me now after reading that article. But I don't know if that's completely what it means, but like in all contexts and scenarios. But this is something, yeah, just to be aware of, that people are drawn to this, right? There's something going on where people are looking for connection, and they're looking for AI to meet that need for connection, and also for finding life purpose. Okay, so another aspect of awareness that we should be aware of is that there are a lot of heart issues at the core of misuse and overuse of technology. And so, you know, if we don't recognize the underlying needs that the digital technology is kind of bringing to light as we're exploring these things, you know, we're gonna find ourselves just putting Band-Aids on the issues that are really their deeper needs or deeper wounds that need something else, something more. And so starting with this type of awareness, we can be poised to offer a message of hope, the message of hope in particular that God offers in himself. And that's what's really unique about the Christian worldview and being able to engage in this stuff, because there are good answers. You know, people are gonna be running to generative AI and they're gonna be disappointed. They're gonna be hurt, they're gonna be let down. They're gonna get into cycles that they don't wanna be in. It's gonna impact their relationships. And that it doesn't have to be that way, because God offers something better. That, you know, the message of hope in the Bible is that all people are valuable and made in his image. That we're made to be relational, to connect with God and with other people. These are good desires. The fact that people need connection is good. It's good when people recognize that, because we do need it. And, you know, when we try to fill our needs in things other than God and his design for these things, we do experience disordered desires and thinking that breaks down our mental health and our relationships. And so, yeah, being able to turn to God for help in these areas is really what's going to be able to free people up and to be able to use technology well instead of ways that can be harmful to them. Yeah, ultimately the answer is to reconnect back to God and his truth, to put everything back into alignment is kind of the goal. I read this really great book by, I think his name is Tony Renke. He wrote this book called 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. And I found it very insightful, some great biblical principles to consider our technology usage. He's just very real. He's like, hey, I'm writing this book for me as much as I'm writing it for other people, because this is challenging. God provides a lot of great wisdom and insight. And yeah, it's definitely worth a read for kind of thinking about, like, what does it look like to support spiritual growth for ourselves and also our children as we're kind of navigating these needs that people have in their hearts. Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about boundaries and safeguards as an aspect or an element of family digital wellness. And when I say boundaries, what I mean by that is, like, as adults in the lives of children, being able to be the ones to set kind of the boundaries of what they can access, what they're allowed and not allowed to do, is actually a really important part of, you know, parenting. So that would involve setting device and app time limits. It could involve also setting, like, device usage curfews, that instead of, you know, children and adolescents having kind of free reign to be able to use technology whenever and however long they want to. It's like, we're actually, as a family, going to put away our devices, you know, an hour or two before bed, so that we can let our minds settle down. It'll help with sleep and a lot of other things. There's also another boundary that you could put up is, like, maybe having no devices in the bedroom overnight. They are finding that a lot of children and teens do wake up during the night to, like, text their friends or, you know, to get online to look at things. And so it's very distracting. It interrupts sleep. And so just being able to cut that off from them so that they can be free to sleep well overnight can be a really great boundary to set up for them, because they probably won't be able to do it for themselves. I do see this a lot as a school counselor, is more and more, like, sleep issues kind of coming up. Kids coming to school really tired because they've been on their device overnight. And so they're sleeping when they're supposed to be learning, or, like, falling asleep in class, you know. And it's because there aren't good boundaries around it for them, and they need help. They need the adults in their lives to be able to set those boundaries for them so that they can get the good sleep that they need. Now, when I talk about safeguards, what I'm talking about is, like, screen monitoring and, like, apps that block content on phones. This is another helpful element for digital well-being, because there's just a lot of stuff out there. And one, you know, safeguard that we can put up for kids is being able to limit what their device can take in, or to have the monitoring so if they run into something, it can be alerted and it can kind of, you know, create a conversation. And I actually have in the handouts that I offered, the half sheet of paper is, the half sheet of paper has some suggested tools, like apps or software, that could be used on your family's devices. There's several on there. I actually use generative AI to create that list, so it's a good usage, trying to model good usage, right? But part of good usage is knowing that I did not have a time to vet all of those programs. The top three are the ones I actually know about, you know, families using. Bark, Accountable to You, Covenant Eyes are the ones that I have heard most families using, and they have a lot of great features. And each one kind of has, like, different strengths. The other ones that are on there, I did go onto their websites to kind of see what's going on. It seems like a lot of companies are recognizing the need for this type of software, and so they're improving how these tools can block and monitor devices. So, yeah, I recommend looking into that if your family is interested in it, maybe doing a little bit of research about what type of tool you'd want to use. I would definitely recommend checking out all those websites and making sure you feel comfortable with the privacy, privacy usage, and there's some things to consider there that I don't have time to get into this morning, but it's worth some research on your end. Okay, let's talk about modeling also. So as adults, one way that we can help create, like, you know, healthy family dynamics when it comes to digital usage is in the household rules about devices. And some of that has to do with, one, being able to have them there, but also following them ourselves. So if we say no phones at the dinner table for the kids, the adults also shouldn't have phones at the dinner table. Or no phones before bed, maybe that's something everyone can adopt. It probably would benefit everyone's mental health. And also screen time allowances. Being able to limit yourself also and show that you're limiting it means that you're taking it seriously. Sometimes it can be confusing to kids where it's like, okay, I have to monitor all these things, or I have to have these limits, but apparently it doesn't matter for you, so maybe when I grow up, it doesn't matter so much. But being able to be like, no, I'm in this with you, it's also for my mental health. It can be a better, like, a well-rounded family plan for increasing everyone's mental health and digital health in this area. We can share about the negative impacts that we're noticing on ourselves. Like, you know, maybe that means apologizing for distractedness or irritability due to being on devices. That could actually be really helpful to model with the children in our lives. So it'll be like, man, I am so sorry. I was distracted by this thing, and I wish that wasn't where I let my attention go. I want to like put this away so we can have a real conversation. We can also share about what we're trying to do to limit the negative impact. So this is something that is really valuable for us to think about for ourselves, for our health as adults as well, and being able to share like, man, I took this challenge for myself to like limit my tech usage or something, and I do feel, you know, whatever difference you're noticing. Then I was kind of thinking about it with modeling. You could have a lot of fun with this, I think, actually. Why not make it like a new family dynamic to do things like planning tech-free weekends, you know, so you can unplug the whole family. That could be a great way to create some more family bonding time, to be really intentional about tech usage. And like I said, I think it could just be really fun. Like, what if, you know, instead of tech being like, oh, now we have all this stuff we have to monitor and it's such a bummer to have to think about this stuff, what if it actually ends up enhancing family connection because now we're thinking really intentionally about it? I think that's a great opportunity as we're having this conversation. I think we could make tech-free weekends a regular part of a family schedule. And maybe if you're thinking that like, oh, well, we can't go away every weekend kind of thing, well, you could also make it a staycation. Vacation or staycation models, I think, could be really great in this area. Like just, I think the staycation would just involve doing something fun, something very like tangible, physical, the whole family doing something together that doesn't involve tech. Okay, so as we're, you know, having this conversation, I recognize a lot of people in this room probably have really young children. And so it's like, okay, this is great as we're thinking about kids as they get older. Are there implications for young children now? Well, I will say that I have not been able to find, in the time that I've been kind of researching it, I haven't been finding solid guidance from research in this area for when it comes to like very young children in tech. There are available statistics about trends that show that there is pretty high engagement with technology for kids under 5 years old. I found this article from the Erickson Institute. They were reporting, and this is from 2016, so it's a little outdated, but you know, 9 years ago, this is what it was. I kind of imagine it would increase since then, but it says, 85% of parents reported that they allow their young children under 6 to use technology. 86% of parents reported that they were satisfied with how their young children use technology. And so they found that kind of surprising, because at the same time, they also found that 72% of parents had concerns about technology use, especially around too much screen time, inappropriate content, commercial messages that are aimed at young children, and how technology use takes away from time spent outdoors, enjoying active play, and whether it disrupts sleep. So these concerns are on parents' minds for young children. They are using it pretty widely. And it is actually a lot of the same concerns that we have for older kids. Like when I'm looking at that list, I'm like, we were just talking about pretty much all those things. We didn't talk about aggressive advertising techniques, but they do. They'll try to target, you know, kids to be like, you need this to be happy. And then you're like, oh no, now I have to buy this toy for my kid that's having a hard time. Like it's an aggressive cycle that that we can notice. Okay, so from that article, and I do link this article I cite it at the end of this presentation, which we'll have available online. But they had some tips for parents based on, you know, again, I said it's not like data on specific impacts on kids, but based on the research and statistics about how much, you know, technology is being used and the types of concern, that even if we don't have the data to show it, experientially, we do have concerns about these different areas. So some of their suggestions for young children is to basically, as they're growing up, being able to model healthy tech usage. So teaching them how to, you know, manage, monitor their own tech usage is an important part of it. They recommend really focusing on relationship building for young children, that, you know, anything you can do to foster in-person connection with other children their age, with the family, is gonna be really important, more so than, you know, not focusing on it and letting kind of tech kind of overtake time. So let's see. So actually what I noticed from this whole list, and I won't go through the whole thing because there's a lot of words up there, but basically a lot of the recommendations, even for young children, it parallels what we're talking about for all ages of children and adolescents, that it's going to come down to monitoring, focusing on relationships, putting up boundaries and safeguards, and being intentional with the use of tech to not overuse it. Unfortunately, I can't tell you this morning how much is too much screen time for a two-year-old or something like that. But from some of the principles that we're taking from this, it is kind of a wisdom call. You know, you'll probably, you know your children best, and as you're noticing, maybe some of their like behaviors and how they're being affected by it, being able to notice and adjust based on that, I think will be important. Yeah, I have a couple other recommendations for young children as we keep going. But like I said, it does parallel the rest of the conversation that we're having for like adolescents also. Okay, so I mentioned again that list of the six elements for promoting healthy digital wellness in families. And the next one on the list is teaching wisdom, principles, and skills. So some ideas for this. So how do we like go about it? Well, I think we can create opportunities to be able to teach these principles and skills. Dinner table discussions is a great way to do that. In addition to just modeling, putting away the devices during family time like that, using that time to have discussions could be great. Maybe it means, you know, if we can create family norms of just having meaningful conversations at the table could be great. It doesn't mean that every dinner has to be about talking about tech use or something like that, but like filter it in, like kind of fold in some conversations about tech during those discussions could be a great time. I thought it would be kind of fun. I don't know if any families would be into this, but kids do like to be able to present and to kind of to teach. And I wonder if something like creating like family TED Talk presentations about, you know, maybe you're learning something new or they're learning something new, either it could be a positive use of technology and doing their own research, or maybe they're presenting on a topic about, you know, how are kids their age using technology? They could survey their friends. They could do a little research and talk about the impacts, kind of gives them ownership of thinking about these things and their learning. Oh, I put family challenges up there, as in things like, you know, maybe you want to introduce some new like boundaries or safeguards to the family. And maybe one way to do that is be like, hey, let's like survey, see what our digital usage, you know, what is it currently looking like? And let's make an effort to reduce it by like 20% or something. Or you can look at what kind of data you have and be like, or let's say we're gonna do a family challenge of doing, you know, a certain number of minutes of tech per day, and like everyone kind of like keeps track of their score or something like that. You can kind of make it fun to challenge each other and see if people can keep up with the goals. And again, I think this could just be a great topic of discussion during like whatever planned quality time you might have with your children. Some people think of it as like, you know, date nights with their kids, or discipleship time could be a good opportunity to fold in some of these pieces of wisdom about using tech well, and also the benefits and risks of technology. All right, and that's also related to that the next element, which would be keeping an open dialogue. And I think one thing that's great about thinking about just the open dialogue element of connecting as a family over these topics is that when we have an open dialogue, that's like inviting your kids to tell you what they're thinking, you know, what they're feeling. Asking questions, being curious, and not having to give them the right answers can be really good, because then you get kind of a view into their world, what they're currently experiencing. And that's especially effective when we can do that without like judging or correcting right away. There might be elements that you want to correct or help guide in a different direction, but being able to create space where you're like, right now I'm just learning about what my child thinks, can really help create an open dialogue where they're going to be able to continually come back to you to kind of think through challenging, you know, situations or pressures, you know, throughout their life as they grow up. So that would just involve, you know, listening first, asking questions, and then sharing another perspective, like one needed, but like saving that for, you know, making sure there's space where you're doing the listening first and asking questions primarily. You can ask questions like, what makes you say that? Or how do your friends typically handle those types of situations? What worked? What didn't? That kind of stuff creates open dialogue, as I guess the kind of conversation that we want to have about these things. Open-ended questions where they can offer their thoughts and opinions. All right, and finally, the last element of things that we can do to foster digital well-being in our families is prayer. And really, you know, if we think from a biblical perspective, this is our most powerful tool. James 1:5 says, "If any of you is lacking in wisdom, you should ask God, who will give it to you because he is generous and will not hold it against you." So that verse just encourages parents to seek wisdom from God as they guide their children and face challenges of parenting. Because we are going to run into things where we're going to be like, I do not have wisdom myself on what to do about this situation, this thing that just popped up, or I just don't know how to manage maybe like kids when they have limits on tech. You'll probably run into some temper tantrums and that kind of stuff too, because those are hard boundaries to keep up. When we lack wisdom, we can ask God to help us with that. All right, I do just want to spend a few minutes thinking more specifically about some of the issues of risk to mental health for students, for children and adolescents, because a lot of the articles that I was looking at wouldn't speak specifically to these things, but we do know that, you know, there's a lot of links to using digital media that, you know, increases anxiety, that threatens their kind of self-esteem and can create body image concerns. It can create issues with bullying. There's inappropriate content to be concerned about. And we are seeing more inattention concerns for kids growing up in this digital technology age because their kind of brains and minds are so stimulated for digital interaction that's just very quick. And it lights up those pleasure sensors in our minds so quickly, and they kind of expect that a lot. So it can contributes to some inattention concerns for kids, as well as sleep issues, which we've already talked about a couple times. And so, you know, we're looking at this list of mental health issues that can be connected to digital technology and social media use, you know, contributing to higher anxiety, self-esteem issues, bullying, all these different kind of things. We do see that there's kind of this cyclical cycle where it can dig itself deeper and deeper and deeper in each of these areas, one leading to another, especially when there's a cycle of addiction that's happening where, you know, the usage can ramp up more and more. I do have one statistic from some research about what people perceive about even their own awareness of like social media addiction and technology addiction. So experts believe that 16 to 33 million Americans could be addicted to their social media. And 30% of Americans consider themselves addicted to social media, like they would just say it for themselves. And another concern is that 41% of the world's 4 to 18-year-olds use TikTok. And each year, Americans spend over 11 days on TikTok. So we can see that this usage really is ramping up and creating a cycle. And when we know that it has these negative effects on mental health and well-being, the addiction piece is part of what has to be treated and taken care of as well. Just from the standpoint of, like, how do we help disconnect, interrupt that cycle that leads to more and more usage? I guess here's another thought is, especially as we're thinking about young children, if we know that screen addiction leads to these negative consequences when kids are older, we should be very thoughtful about practices that wire developing brains to like crave digital stimuli, both in education and at home. And I mention education because there is a lot of conversation within the field of education about how much digital technology is being used for learning also. And we don't know. The thing is, we don't know the impact on like all of these things, but maybe we should start working toward trends where we're using less screens for some of these things. Again, I can't say with confidence any like specific numbers. It's just a consideration that we should have out there because we do know that our brains crave, digital stimulation, and so limiting it as much as possible is going to be very helpful. All right, I figured people probably want some specific recommendations for what to do if we are noticing some of the like risks to mental health, like from that previous list. What can we do to help reduce that? So when it comes to anxiety, limiting tech time is going to be really valuable. Again, this kind of addiction, this cycle of scrolling and doom scrolling, it will only feed more of that into itself. So limits are going to be really valuable for reducing anxiety. Promoting positive activities like reading can be valuable because, you know, we're going to fill our minds with something. We should, you know, help our children to fill their minds intentionally with good content. And so maybe going back to kind of reading, like physical books and that too. Or it could even be like engaging in interesting projects or crafts or creativity. That's going to really help fill their minds with positive things rather than the cycle of anxious tech scrolling. Open dialogue will be really valuable as well. If you're noticing some signs of anxiety, asking about it and being able to, you know, try to find some connections that might help like the student to intentionally do things that can reduce their anxiety, which is going to go along with teaching coping skills. So a lot of students that I talk to, when we talk about coping skills, what are things that help you calm down when you're feeling anxious, worried, overwhelmed? A lot of students, one of the first things that they will mention to me when I'm, you know, working as a school counselor is that, like, oh, you know what helps me the most is, you know, TikTok, scrolling, watching videos, that kind of stuff. And on one hand, distractions can help when we're feeling like really overwhelmed. It kind of puts our mind in a different place. But if that's a kid's only coping skill, again, we know that there's a lot of negative impacts of technology and that kind of cycle, kind of like running to that as the only option will probably help actually end up creating more anxiety in the long run. Temporarily, they might feel a little bit better, but it does kind of add to unhelpful behaviors in the long run. So helping kids to be able to recognize what are other ways of de-stressing, going for a walk, getting a drink of water, talking with a friend. There are so many other options for coping that don't involve tech that we should be encouraging kids more and more to. Okay, when it comes to self-esteem and body image, for both of those types of issues, having a healthy critique of the messages of media is going to be really valuable. I run a 20-week girls counseling group that focuses a lot on just like all the things about, things that middle school and high school girls today need support in thinking through. And one of the things that we spend a lot of time on is being able to notice the messages that are out there in the media and being able to combat it with things that are actually true. There are videos out there that show you like, you know, Photoshopped images are not real. Like no real human being looks like some of these advertisements look like. And so when I show some of these videos, the girls, their eyes are wide open. Like, oh my gosh, like I did not realize that the images that are out there, like I thought people really looked like that and I'm supposed to look like that too. That can be super eye-opening for them. We can find and highlight positive role models in our lives. Instead of being like inundated by all the people who are promoted on social media, being able to think about who are the people in your lives that you really admire. That can be a really great way to be like real people, real lives. And another helpful tool in this area could be to memorize Bible verses. I point kids to Ephesians 2:10 a lot because that one's just such an important message from God. It says, "You are God's masterpiece, created in Christ Jesus to do good works that he prepared in advance for us to do." And so that's a really, really cool image that you are God's masterpiece. You know, when God created the mountains and the lakes and the rivers and the glaciers and all these amazing things, but what did he call his masterpiece? He said, "You were his masterpiece." That is such an important message for kids to hear, especially when they're kind of being in it, you know, told by social media, "You're not enough, you're not enough, you're not enough." When it comes to bullying and inappropriate content online, the most helpful tools are going to be using screen monitoring tools to kind of catch that stuff and to report it. And again, creating an open dialogue as kids are running into that stuff so that they can learn from you about how to think about each of those things and how to reach out for help. With inattention and sleep issues, I think those are going to be combated best with device time limits, technology curfews, so that's saying like we don't use our devices after whatever time, and also not having devices in the bedroom overnight is going to make a huge difference, I think, for both of these concerns. All right, so as we're wrapping up here, I guess what I really want to highlight is that some of these intentional activities that I'm talking about adding in are things that are actually going to have, it's not just like an extra thing that we have to do. It can really be promoting a great dynamic within families. You know, some of these things, if we do more of that, it's going to increase family connectedness, right? Turning off the screens altogether, you know, planning activities that don't involve devices, like that's only adding great benefit to families and their time together. It reduces loneliness. A lot of times the reason that kids are turning to tech for these things is because they're not connecting with their peers and with their families. So as we're promoting more of these things, they're not going to feel the need to try to get them fulfilled in technology because there's more interaction happening within families and their groups of friends in person that, you know, is filling up that need. And another great aspect of this is that, you know, with these open dialogues, with kind of creating more family conversations around these things, it does provide avenues for you in their relationship with God to be their source of information and wisdom rather than whatever gets generated from the stuff that's out there on the internet, right? So that's a great benefit. And there's going to be so many opportunities with some of these adjustments to our schedules and our conversations that will build positive relating skills and coping skills as well.